Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
Robert is being chased, thrown on the run, and it is caught! Touchdown, Keenan Allen! What a great...
My goal is not to break you. My goal is to make you harder to break.
Comes back, number six! Number six!
Huge sack by Joey Bosa.
Touchdown! 90-yard touchdown!
Picked off at the 8-yard line by Derwin James.
Sets his feet, takes a shot downfield, has Knighton. Caught! Touchdown, Chargers!
Boys, grab your lunch boxes and go attack this day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
It's another big week in the NFL, a bigger week in United States of America, and the biggest week for the TDU boys. Welcome to the Thunderdown Under Chargers Football Podcast. Welcome back to me, your host, Andy Prophet. It's another two-man show this week. I'm joined by the Teach, Jack Reed. And where's Al, you might ask? Well, he and his wife, Kirsten, are getting some well-deserved rest after a pretty crazy 48 hours, welcoming in the safe arrival of their beautiful daughter!
Woo!
I don't want to spoil any more of their news, but of course, we send all of our love and congratulations to the three of them. Another new addition to the TDU family. Jack, how are you, my friend? I missed you.
I know. You look like you had a wonderful time in Bali with your little son, Ozzy, and your wonderful partner, Cash. Very jealous, but I must admit it is getting nice and warm down in Tasmania, so we're getting a bit of sun too. But now I'm ripping. Man, it's good. It's such great news to hear from Alistair. And we can't wait to have him back on to obviously overshare everything as he normally does as we're talking pre-show. But it will be wonderful. It's wonderful for them because they've been on a journey as we all have. So, and it's just great to talk about another freaking win from the Chargers, which was wonderful.
Oh, baby. Yeah, it's good to be back. I missed a great show, or should I say a good show last week after the win over the Saints. Lots of pop, pop, pop. Unable to watch the last two games myself while being overseas, frantically following them live on the Bleacher Report app, refreshing like a madman at the even weeer hours of the morning with the time difference there. Alas, yes. I'm back. We get another victory show after the Chargers go to Ohio and record a dominant 27-10 victory over the Cleveland Browns. Now sitting at 5-3 at the midway point of the season, Bolts have now registered as many wins as they did in season 2023. The Jim Harbaugh experience continues to trend upward. Now, before I get over to your burning thoughts on the game, Jack, you know, they say Jameis Winston, he was AFC Player of the Week after his performance against Baltimore. I didn't see it. So while winning myself in Ohio, I thought I'd check it out. It doesn't look like the LASIK did much for Mr. Winston, okay? He threw a few picks. It wasn't good. In Ohio, Jack, I said it a while ago, okay? They were eating the cats. They were eating the dogs. And all the pets being eaten in Ohio. Jameis, he wasn't eating W's this week in Ohio. It was the Chargers eating up the dog pound there on Sunday in Cleveland. It was impressive. I was making gains just yesterday in the Blue Wall States. Some of the best gains. Myles Garrett, he looked like he was making some gains against the Chargers Blue Wall in the first half, but it wasn't enough. If I build a wall, maybe I'll paint it blue, but probably red. They tell me Kamala won in Cleveland this week in Cuyahoga. I think, I don't know. What I do know, okay, is the Browns, they didn't win in Cleveland. They're 2-7. They're not good. These Chargers, they're good. This Jesse Minter, that's a good defense. I like that. It may be the best defense. I don't know. All right, that's enough out of the 47th president of the United States. Let's talk Chargers. Browns, over to you, Jack.
I don't know if that was Donald Trump or John Gotti or something like that.
I think it had a bit of Christopher Walken in it. And I apologize if I offend.
Christopher Walken as well. A little bit sort of New York mob boss, you know. It's good. We have the cappuccinos. We have the capicolo, the gabagool, and we shoot them in the head. No, where to start, man? Like, let's start with the offense, right? This is the third week in a row where we really need to talk about what's happening at the quarterback position. Because I will probably go out on a limb here and say that this is the best 3 weeks of football I've probably seen Justin Herbert put together in terms of what he's having to deal with. you know, if we cast our mind back to the rookie season, of course, every week was interesting because we're sort of watching someone we don't know, you know, grow and develop, and we're, you know, falling over ourselves the fact that we've got this guy on our team. But man, this guy is finding the offense more and more comfortable. And you said, Andy, in your Trump diatribe about Myles Garrett and the defense getting to Justin Herbert. He was under a heck of a lot of pressure, which we'll get to in a second. But man, that pass to QJ, McConkey, Palmer, I've always been a big, I'm not a critic, but I've always been big on saying, listen, Justin Herbert's been paid the big money now. Big guys in terms of receivers have walked away, and Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, he now needs to elevate the players around him. And my Lord, the last 3 weeks, he has been elevating them something silly. I'm just over the moon with what Justin Herbert is doing, and given sometimes what's in front of him in the offensive line.
Yeah, well, I think for me, I'm seeing an improvement in the chemistry on offense, in the passing game, the trust. Still no Chark, so no typical deep threat, but Palmer, McConkey, QJ all recorded over 60 receiving yards each. QJ notching 100. Herbert throwing on third downs, 154 yards, two TDs. Completions of 28, 66, 21. If that's not putting an offense on your shoulders when, you know, you're getting a sack here or there, and especially, you know, in that first half, I think, did Garrett register all three of his sacks in the first half?
Correct, like, yeah. It was like almost
they
the
were
last,
really humming
in the second quarter. Yeah, they were,
yeah, and then to
nuts.
Still be up 20-3 at the break was just awesome. He's just hop on my shoulders and let's go. But I am concerned about six sacks, especially when you're contorted over yourself, over your linemen. You've got Shelby Harris and Dalvin Tomlinson pancaking you and doing all that jazz. There's obviously still issues in the protection up front. So I know I listened to the show last week, and there was chitter chatter about the interior of the O-line, blitz pickups, that sort of thing. So I want to see where you sit with the vibe of the O-line, because per episode 94 of TDU, you're getting rolled up. I like it. Is it harder to be critical? Do you think it's harder to be critical of the group when it's the superstars on the outside that are sort of, you know, for a better phrase, more guilty than others?
Yeah, listen, that defensive line from Cleveland, Myles Garrett obviously leading the way, but then you had Dalvin Tomlinson in the interior, and then this guy, Isaiah McGuire, who's having a freaky season as well. All across the line, it wasn't just the interior this week. We're getting manhandled, I thought. There was a sack that Myles Garrett did. I think it was his second one where Joe Alt tries to, and Myles Garrett essentially just picks him up and throws him backwards to get to Justin Herbert. That's the best defensive line that we might see for this year. They're a nasty, nasty defense. We're talking, I think, second in pass rush and fourth in run defense. So it's one of the other two per PFF. I'm torn on this because I did look at the numbers, and this is kind of where you're leading me, which is cool. So I was critical last week of the Chargers not being able to pick up blitzes. But the Cleveland numbers, and there's going to be caveats to this for people in listening, so I understand that, but the Cleveland numbers show a little bit of a different story. And if anything, there's a bit of an improvement. So Herbert, when blitzed, threw at 83.3% completion for 92 yards with 15.3 yards per attempt. Like, those are ludicrous, ludicrous numbers. And even more so, he didn't actually take a sack when blitzed. So his time to throw was in, it was over 3 seconds, and he had a passer rating of 118 or 119, dare I say, and four first downs. However, the other side of that is when he's under pressure. So this is when you're just rushing with four. His numbers drop quite drastically. He's looking at just over 50% completion percentage, 9.4 yards, 16 total pressures with six sacks and only two first downs, and a passer rating still pretty high of 124. But those, it seems to me that when there is a blitz, and I was critical and I said that they're not identifying it, this week, when there was, clearly they'd done their homework. Justin Herbert was ready. He communicated at the line. It's just the Cleveland were getting home with four consistently again and again and again and again. And I don't think, as I said, that's the strongest defensive line they'll face. But I thought that as a as an interesting statistic, because I was so critical of them not picking up blitzes last week, something that they've improved on, clearly. There's still issues with their protection, though.
Mm. Yeah, those six sacks all came on plays where Jim Schwartz only really sent four, which is troubling. And look, maybe it comes down to just being a sort of a math game. You send four, you've got seven in coverage. So it does make the matchups on the field outnumbered in the past game. So, you know, maybe there was a little bit of that. For the most part, the Browns, they've got a good secondary, right? Denzel Ward, Stingy. And a couple of those two big third down touchdown plays came on breakdown communication, blown coverage, and Denzel Ward was a problem in a couple of those. But on the whole, like, it was still a great performance, but they really allowed those mistakes by Cleveland really allowed the Chargers to put the foot to the pedal early in the game.
I mean, I would agree, but there's also an element, and this is the third, I guess, monkey in the room that we guess got to talk about. Elephant in the room, should I say? Not monkey, I don't know where that came from. But we got to talk about Greg Roman, right? And is he calling the plays that that are needed for the Chargers to succeed? Now, putting up 27 points, I would suggest yes. Are there large patches of the game where nothing much happens? There is, but when you have the number one scoring defense in the NFL, you can kind of afford that. And we saw at the end of the game where this kind of the battle of wills just was won by the Chargers, and the Browns kind of just gave up and the running game started to move. But just another interesting bit of numbers, Andy, and then I'm going to ask you a question. We've been crying out for Roman to use play action and to support Herbert. You know, Herbert's been a bit injured, so it's like, well, maybe they haven't been utilizing it a lot. But on Sunday against the Browns, seven of their nine first down passes were play action. Okay, now what does that signal to you? And this isn't so play action. Okay, it's there. It's not happening on second down, third down. We're actually going to play action on first down. How does that make you feel when you hear those numbers? And considering that we have been critical of Roman perhaps not opening up the playbook or being fairly conservative, and we've been crying out for doing other stuff. Play action on first down, seven of nine, that's not conservative.
No, it's not. And considering how heavy he ran that play action attack last week, he kind of flipped the script a bit this week. 73.5% was no play action, and we worked pretty well out of it. 14 of 21, 226 yards and two TDs. How do I feel? I like it because for the differential, and just excuse me while I grab this, in the first five games of deep passes, 20 plus air yards, 3 of 13 in the first five games, 23.1% completion, 85 yards. In the last two games on those deeper shots, 8 of 12, so two-thirds, and 277 yards. So I think Greg Roman is starting to work out, like, find the groove and realize that, hey, look, you know, we can actually start opening the field a little bit more and take advantage of these sort of things. So I like that mentality. I like that aggressiveness. Does it always work? No, but whatever always works, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
I'm happy to say that. I'm happy for him to keep it different as well. Keep the opposition watching tape guessing
with different stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, maybe, you know, coming up next week, Tennessee will go, oh, you know, seven of nine first downs, he's gone play action. Oh, man, yeah. And then bang, he does something completely different and we go back to run, pass at third and long.
Yeah. Touch wood. But how good is it to see that? And I didn't really notice it that much when I was watching the broadcast. It was on the second one around and then digging into some numbers. I was like, oh, there's some different stuff here. And you say that, you know, that there were defensive breakdowns in the Browns secondary and we took advantage of that. There is a little bit of credit I think you have to give to Roman, knowing that the way that they played the coverage, Denzel Ward looked like he was expecting safety help over the top twice and it didn't happen. So, but you know, going back to Herbert again, when he's kept clean, and this is one of the, if he's kept clean just a little bit more, you know, he's completing over 70%. He's at 11 yards per attempt and he is just dominating 200 ish yards.
Yeah.
All I want for Christmas, all I want for Christmas is just that interior O-line just to hold up a little bit more and keep him. And as you said, not for him like bending over linemen with his legs snapping. On that, how did you perceive Justin Herbert taking the sacks? I saw them a little bit different. He didn't look as panic because, you know, in the past, 6 sacks on Justin Herbert in the first half, essentially, he'd be seeing ghosts and he'd be running around and doing all sorts of stuff. From a physical standpoint, how did you perceive his kind of reaction to it?
I thought it was incredible. He took all of those hits completely in his stride, didn't throw a turnover-worthy play, which is remarkable for me when you've got the speed and the power of Garrett just absolutely manhandling Slater, beating him with power and then finesse inside, all those sort of things, speed around. Like, he was just getting mauled. I don't know. Maybe that's just one of those things. Herbert pops down into Aaron Rodgers' dark cave and he just envisions the hit and the hurt. And he goes, I can't feel any of this anymore. So I can just deal with it. And I'll throw a question back at you. Would you like to see him throw the ball away a little bit more than eat some of those sacks? Is it just not in him? Is he like I must achieve every single time, unlike a Philip Rivers who, you know, would see a play break down and just fucking heave it into the second tier?
I guess you've got to think that Justin Herbert is nearing the peak of his physical powers. He sees, and I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, he sees the Josh Allens, you know, those big guys. Herbert is 6'6". We sometimes forget that. And he will try and stand in the pocket and make the play. But yes, I would like to see him be a little bit more conservative in that situation. You look at the evolution of Mahomes, the evolution of any good quarterback is that you learn to not take the hit. And that's how you get longevity. And that's how you can also frustrate the defense as well. You know, even if your offensive line is being beat, and I think I mentioned this on I can't remember if it was last week or week before, is that I can just remember watching Tom Brady and, you know, you'd be like, oh, you know, the pass rush is, oh, he's thrown it away.
Yeah.
And that must be so, and that's another little maybe arrow in Herbert's quiver a little bit, just to manipulate the defensive pass rush if it is getting home consistently. Does he strike me as a person that's worried about his completion percentage and his quarterback rating? Not really. Not like perhaps Tom was in his later years. I mean, I'm making a massive assumption there. But yes, I would like to see him get a little more, be a little more safe, please. Please, Justin, please.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting that Herbert is a stat counter or anything like that and concerned about it. I just think he always, and it's a great thing to have, always thinking that you can make the play, right? I'm not getting tired of it, but I'm almost getting tired of hearing Jim Harbaugh refer to him as a warrior because he just doesn't give up. And, you know, you're like, yeah, but, you know, play the ball by its merits, right? To use a little cricket analogy, because not everyone is there to hit. Use a baseball, take a walk, that kind of stuff. So yeah, look, I think he's just always got that drive in him. He's that quiet kind of, no, I can do this. I'm capable. I don't need to be flashy or anything, but I'm going to stay in the play as long as I can. And it is a little annoying that he's athletic for sure, but he's not nimble. I think Al called Mahomes the Marvin the Martian type of just sort of wheeling around and just being being able to escape the pocket all the time. Herbert doesn't quite have that. He's a stand and deliver kind of guy. But but that's the thing. If the protection's not there, that's sort of up to Greg Roman to insert a hot, right? That quick out. Going back to, I know I just before gave a lot of credit to Cleveland kind of choking up those two big touchdown plays. But from the first play, you know, using McConkey just coming in on, you know, 16-yard gain on the first, that kept the linebackers honest and the safeties honest. And I think especially in QJ's one, in Palmer's touchdown catch on the 3rd and 21 or whatever ridiculous thing it was, I think he really sold the safety in with his eyes. And then obviously that communication then broke down, had him over the top in for the touchdown. The QJ run and catch was just awesome to watch. That's just one of those.
And it's finding, obviously, it feels like, because it was Ward both times, those communication breakdowns, does it once, it's a bad play, and you go, fair enough. It strikes me that it happened twice, that they saw something on tape, they saw a pressure point, and they just decided to pinch it. They just decided to twist the knife a little bit. Throwing back to you, on QJ, is this his game? Is this it? Do we have QJ back now? Is he our ex-receiver?
Oh,
did you see enough? Because he was wide open, right? And they're pretty simple catches. Mind you, though, he did make a very, very strong contested catch as well.
Yep.
But this is his most yards ever?
Yeah.
Is he our ex?
I don't know. I don't think so, to be honest. I don't think he's that vertical threat. I think he's... I think we've seen him this year be used in a way that, you know, QJ is supposed to be used. Like, yards after catch... inappropriate amount of wriggle for a guy his size. But yeah, look, the vertical contested catch stuff, it looks like he can work into that. Is he that yet? When you asked me, do we have him back? I said, I thought his ankle looked okay. I think he's back. Yeah. But it's not quite, you know, I wouldn't just go, oh yeah, that's sorted. That's fine. It's great to see him. He's now 4 TDs this year. He had 2 last year, so he's improving, man, and that's kind of all you can ask. And games like this rockets his confidence. He strikes me as like a confidence player, so it's great. There's, like I said at the top, chemistry now. There's trust, because there were some bad drops last year. Green Bay, man, that stuff, you know. Herbert doesn't forget that.
Yeah, that's right.
Herbert would have kicked him out of his fishing team for sure at Sheldon High School.
Definitely. And Herbert would have probably smashed a helmet too if it happens this year. That's that leader. I guess
we do somewhere.
We have been fairly effusive about the offense. I just wanted to touch on a couple of things. The first down execution and the way that we run the ball, I'm still really worried about. Herbert is still having to pull us over the line. Roman's, as I said, I don't have any problems with what Roman is trying to do. The scheme looks good both in the run and the pass game. We're seeing the pass game come on. I just wonder if we don't have the cattle on the offensive line, or they're not gelling with whatever it is at the moment. Zion Johnson, by the way, had a fairly average game. I'll leave it at that. And just to touch on Joe Alt as well, he had his worst graded game per PFF this week. Now, I touched on Isaiah McGuire. I had never heard of this guy before, to be honest, but he is ranked 9th out of 200 edges in the league this year with a grade of almost 90. So, and obviously...
Pressure or run defense? Or just overall?
That's just overall edges.
Right.
Yeah, so he is 9th in the league. So he's up there with guys like TJ Watt, Aiden Hutchinson, all these guys. He allowed 4 pressures, 2 sacks, and earned his grade of 55.3 for pass blocking. All 4 of those pressures came in the second quarter, where he seemed to, for the first time, that he's hit a bit of a cold spell, and he just got abused over and over and over and over again. Run blocker did better. He was in the mid-60s, but this is a learning game for Joe Alt, most
for definitely. For sure. Yeah. Just going back to the running, because I think you're spot on. It's really kind of hard to work out, you know, spoke so much this year about how Roman runs the gap scheme. I don't think we've got the guys at the moment to be able to operate that. Because the zone stuff's working to an extent. I think that late chunk gain by J.K. Dobbins probably came as a result of fatigue, scramble from the defense. But yeah, I really like to see a little bit more consistency throughout the game. Not having to rely on Justin Herbert to sort of dig us out of second and 8 kind of scenarios. But look, can't have it all, because at least the passing game's firing. So
correct.
But we've got this week and then a pretty tough stretch ahead. So
that'll test
all
us,
of I those think. All of those things will, you know, be brought to light, really. So we'll just enjoy it while we can talk about it.
Agreed. Let's
anything more on offense, or should we head over to the defensive side of the ball? Yeah, look, it was a a dominant display throughout that first half, allowing just 57 yards. But it was, you know, the stat sheet was buffed in the second half because even though we gave up 235 yards, we generating sort of six sacks and forcing three interceptions. And while the Browns were on the field for 34 minutes or thereabouts, I think, you know, you usually think of the defense as getting taxed. I think the Browns actually got exhausted themselves. Jameis Winston certainly did because he just started flailing balls left, right, and center. So I think Adam Archuleta put it quite astutely. They had nowhere to throw the ball to. And even after a good week last week, Chubb generated 39 yards off 15 attempts. So a true, for me, a true bend don't break kind of operation. Still allowing a few yards, but man, it was a pretty much a junk time touchdown. Would have almost been our biggest win of the year. So,
oh, to quote Navarro Bowman in his pre-game speech to the backers and some of the edges, everybody's got a plan until they get hit in the mouth. And I was critical, again, of the Chargers losing in Arizona because it seemed like they lost the will battle. This week and last week, they ground them down, especially on the defense. The defensive line was exceptional. Listen, I think it's a bit of a half chub that we're kind of getting in the backfield there. Ba-dum-tsh. Yes, that's a joke. but, you know, to keep him to what we did.
That's a rare hit from you.
It's not too bad. Normally I'm far worse than that. And, you know, listen, the Chargers defense on third down and what Jesse Minter's being able to do. And listen, they only converted, I think it was 6 of 17 off the top of my head. But it's what Minter's doing on those first and second down in terms of scheme, forcing Jameis to fit it into those holes. And with the three picks that ended up occurring, whether they're terrible throws, and I think they're probably going to go down as terrible throws because it's Jameis Winston, to go a glass half full on Minter's approach is that Jameis Winston just couldn't understand what was going on in front of him. The coverage on the back end was just doing strange and weird things. That was it, the Gilman pick where he just throws it. I think it was, I can't remember who was on the coverage, but didn't force, I think it was Tillman, didn't force him inside, kept him on the outside. Jameis thought he was going to break inside, never happened. And it was a free pick. So
The one that went over the top, that was sticky ass coverage from Taheeb Still on Tillman there.
Like, exceptional.
Awesome. Yeah. Sorry if I've misquoted that. I'm pretty sure it was Still, but the commentator called him Tar Steel, which I liked it.
Yeah, and I mean six sacks, right? You know, six? We had six sacks on Jameis as well, so it's six and six. Exceptional. Tooley had a great game. Mac played incredibly well. Big Tier Tart, they just kicked it straight into his guts.
Oh man,
which I thought was pretty interesting.
Is this real life? The Chargers are blocking a field goal. Is this real life?
I don't know.
Great to see.
And Morgan Fox possibly had one of his best games for the year, I'd say.
Yeah.
Everything's just sort of trending up for this defense, man. I did want to ask you, are we going to have the Taheeb Still conversation today or are we just going to wait?
Does it revolve around him staying where he is and Asante not coming back into the fold? Where do you want to go? Because I'm happy to have it. I've been wanting to talk about him for. Oh, yeah, I see where you're going now. I think we have to. Although I know Al would love to be a part of this.
Okay. Yeah. I probably listen in Al's absence. I'm going to say that I'll have to eat my humble pie here. I wasn't super high on Taheeb Still coming out. The last number of weeks, I've slowly just been eating slice after slice and being very quiet about it, mind you. But
nibbling at the crust, a berry here or there.
That's right.
Now it's full Bruce Bogtrotter pie in face everywhere.
That's a Matilda reference for you people that had wonderful childhoods and read that book or watched that film. I have to eat my humble pie there because Taheeb Still's playing exceptionally well. And in some ways, Christian Fulton going out is not great, but it's allowed both he and Hart to get meaningful snaps. When you've got two fifth-round picks on the field, starting CB1, CB2, you'd think that the games would be closer and they'd be getting abused a lot more, but they're just not. So exceptional.
Yeah. Yeah. Very impressive. I want to talk about Tahib still a little bit later on when we get into snakes and ladders without giving too much away. Linebackers as well.
Oh, yeah.
Predominantly Henley. Awesome. We're going to talk about him a little bit more too in a bit. But on we mentioned the block field goal. How good was it to see Darius Davis return a punt 55 yards?
Yeah, and that's the best he's looked all year on both special teams and offense. But it was wonderful to have him back. I'm not a huge fan of seeing McConkie down there receiving punts and kicks. I get a little bit worried that if he does decide to take it out, that he's going to get absolutely hammered. And that's not what you want from Herbert's favorite target this year. But Darius Davis back. Listen, everything seems to just... I've never experienced this as a Chargers fan, right? I've never experienced people going on IR and then like competency coming in. Normally it's like, oh, okay, Darius
Davis. I believe they call it depth.
Tom Telesco is looking at his dictionary and he can't find that word anywhere. He's like, well, it's not in the English language. Seeing Darius Davis go. And Troy Dyer, shout out to Troy Dyer.
Oh, great game. Massive goal line play, fourth down stop. I think it was Kyle who said, maybe it was Ryan who said it looked like he'd sort of gained a few inches and 20 pounds all in the space of a week and actually just laid the hit on Tillman. That was great. But hey, look, it's you're getting the feeling like you saw the in the locker room after the game where Harbaugh's handing out more game balls than they have at a Walmart, and how pumped all the players are for each other. They're like, hey, he was good too. These guys are just like gelling with each other. They want to play. It's a fun defense to play on. All these guys are super motivated, so they definitely feel that Jesse Minter is the guy. Now it's just a matter of the Chargers holding on to him. So, you know, top five scoring defense would be great, but now you're one, and now you're really drawing attention to yourself, Jesse. So we might have to align you with that signal stealer just so you get pegged down a notch or two.
But, I mean, it's incredible to think that a lot of the guys on that defense were there last year, a majority of them, in fact, and they're from an old regime. So it's incredible what goes into culture and what a leader or a change of scene or someone to just grasp the spirit of men, get them together, feel like they're supported, you know, there's a direction. And I guess that's what we didn't have in Staley. Staley probably had all the X's and O's, but couldn't elicit the response from the locker room like Harbaugh does. And on that, I was also thinking that there are a lot of coaches that seem to this end of game speech is all about them. And they do this speech that's 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes. And it's kind of me. I'm finding Harbaugh is getting simpler and simpler as he goes on. It's just like, hey, good go. High fives, everyone get around, high fives, game balls. You know, and not trying to sort of make this short YouTube clip about him talking about how great we are and boom, boom, boom. It's giving me vibes of Dan Campbell. Slightly different to Dan Campbell, different vibe, a little more senile perhaps and a little bit weird.
Yeah, I was going to say because Dan Campbell doesn't necessarily look like he needs a nap during the speech, you know.
That's right, yeah. But it's just so different how that leadership style and you put, you know, certain cogs in certain places, how the whole machine, even if it's got the same parts, just starts to move that little bit better and gels a little bit more. So great point. Great. Lovely to bring up. Good job.
Yeah.
And yeah.
But on the whole, there were moments where special teams was great. That return was awesome. I thought JK had a couple of really good punts, one or two, not so great. Dicker. He missed his first career field goal inside 50 yards. So he's now 58 of 59 inside that mark. And the three, another missed point after. So those three point afters that he's missed in his career have come this season. You talk about, Jim Harbaugh talked about, I think he was on Colin Coward's show, and he's talking about once guys get paid, sometimes they take a put their feet up. Justin Herbert's the opposite. Maybe Cameron Dicker's that guy. He got his bag and now he's like, who gives a shit? I'll just fucking swing my foot and do what I like.
No, we love you, Cam. Yeah, we love you, Cam. Last thing before we move on, Andy, and I had it written in my notes here, and I'm jumping back a little bit. The Elijah Molden pick, the Tahib Steele deflection, that was amazing, incredible. Yes, you know, one's a free agent and the other one's a fifth round pick. But you know what's different? And, you know, that was the moment when I thought we're going to win this game and this is a different team perhaps to what I've experienced, is that Elijah Molden goes down in the end zone. He had space in front of him. He had space, but he goes, nah, I'm going to sit down. The smart football play, which is
love that.
Almost every red zone interception should happen, but I can't remember where I can't remember who it was or who did it, but it was a cornerback. Was it Asante that picked it off and just decided to run, and then the ball was at the 5 yard line.
I remember the play. I can't remember who it was, but
it's that.
Yeah, I remember that driving me absolutely insane as well.
Just going like, what are you doing, bro? Like you've just lost 15 yards. I know the pick's amazing, but you've just lost 15 yards and put Herbert, you know, essentially with his ass on the end line. So that is just something different, and it was a small little thing that probably doesn't get spoken about in the mainstream media, but that from a free agent, because you'd think that a free agent would be trying to make his bag and trying to do everything. He goes, nah, I know exactly what I need to do. I'm going to go down. That's a smart play. Yep. Superb.
Because the play doesn't stop until, you know, the ball's dead. And if you're having the ball dead, even with possession at the 2 or 3 yard line, you're right. People are going, you know, athletic traits, football brain, maybe not so much. I'm sure Al would pipe up and say, hey, you know, that's just conservative football. You got to just go, put your head down and go, you know, go for it. But I think he'd actually agree with that one. Like, that sort of stuff drives us insane when it's
necessary. Now he's a father. Maybe he's going to be a little bit more conservative, perhaps.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, snakes and ladders before we get into your teachable moments. Yep. I got a slithery slither of snakes. These ones don't bark, unlike Alistair's from last week. Sorry, I'm not sorry at all. Horrific snake noises. There's a lot of weird stuff that comes out of Australia. Yours truly, for one. And no doubt backed by another left-of-centre teachable moment in due course, the man opposite me has his moments. One confectionery, lolly snakes, a bag of gelatinous snakes of varying flavours, are a favourite of many Aussie with a sweet tooth. Today, for the coming back to earth, I'll split a bag of snakes for the tackles. They've been great all year. We've praised them endlessly. But criticism is the yin to praise's yang. Slater and Alt were monstered at times by Miles Garrett, and it's back to work this week for the two bookend guns of the Chargers' offensive line. It does go without saying that the interior guys will have their hand out for the less liked flavours of lemon and orange, because them big boys always got to eat. All right, and for my ladder, I made a little nod to Jim Harbaugh handing out all the game balls. And I was like, oh, you know, you can't give it to everyone, but I'm going to end up just about doing that. You know, everyone who got a game ball deserves to be risen up the ladder. 3 interceptions, 6 sacks across the defense. It's probably fair enough. I am just covering defense here. Before I name my super sore, I've got a couple of shout outs. Derwin James, big number 3. We have been asking for a little bit more. There's been some criticism of DJ on TDU, maybe not playing up to his potential, but beyond a bit of a nuisance and a threat inside the box. I thought he was great in coverage, recorded the most tackles in passing plays, came so close to 2 picks. One, if that pass was upheld that he just snatched out as they hit the ground, would have been awesome. Second shout out goes to rookie Tahib Steele, as you said, Jack. Undercut a route beautifully after losing leverage to record his first career interception, but that freakish athletic play to read the corner pass to Jerry Jeudy and tip the ball to Elijah Molden for the end zone interception, which started the domino effect of Jameis Winston just shitting the bed. He probably had 3 or 4 other great plays on the day too. But Deion Henley for mine, 4 stops in the run game, a great read on a Tampa 2 drop, affecting a PBU, almost an interception. He would have punched the ground 7 or 8 times. I was expecting him to be on IR with a busted wrist. But this little like stat rundown is courtesy of a friend of the show, Steve Haglund, who just pumps out tweets like it's going out of style. Through 9 weeks amongst all AFC linebackers, he's 3rd in coverage grade, 8th in total run stops, first in run stop percentage and first in pass breakup. So he is putting together one heck of a season. Keep it up, Dayon. Over to you, Jackie boy.
Nice. Good snakes and ladders. That was excellent. And I'm glad there was no barking like last week. We left the barks in the pound in Cleveland. Okay.
In Ohio.
How many Michelin stars could Chef Ortiz earn by season's end? Yes, this is a food-related teachable moment, and it goes for a little bit, but please indulge me and just listen to my dulcet.
We got a sponsor this week?
Food. Out of all the guards, centers, and tackles drafted in 2024, who is the only player to be graded in the top five for both pass blocking and run blocking? That's pick number five on the menu, ladies and gentlemen, the Atlantic Salmon. Joel comes fourth in pass blocking with a grade of 72.5. Impressive, right? What's even more amazing is that Alt has played 439 total snaps, whereas the players who rank third, second, and first above him have only played 188 snaps combined. Oh. Given the snap counts and consistency, it's clear that Joe Alt is number one when it comes to pass blocking. Joe Alt ranks fifth overall for run blocking with a grade of 73.1. Above him are all rookies like guards Dominic Pooney and Zach Fraser, who are guard and center respectively, having great years. Goncalves from Indiana, only 57 snaps, and Fuanga as tackle. However, Alt's pass blocking grade is above 70, whereas all those players are pass blocking grades per PFF, all these stats I should have said, are in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. When you consider just tackles, Joe Alt stands out as the best by a wide margin compared to other solid first round talent in all categories. He's a great pick now and even better for the future. What a dish. Atlantic Salmon. One Michelin star. Easily. Next up is Ortiz's signature McConkie lime pie. Lad was pick 34 in the draft. Would you have thought he'd be mentioned alongside names like Malik Nabers, Brian Thomas, and Marvin Harrison, taken 6, 23, and 4th respectively, when minimum snap counts are considered? Would you believe that McConkie has racked up 440 yards compared to Odunze's 391? McConkie ranks first in rookie slot snaps with 159, seventh in contested catch rate as a sub-6 footer, and third in first downs with 23. Thomas Jr. is second with 25, and Neighbors is first with 31. So you're talking about a first down machine here. McConkie in the second round is an absolute steal, so late in the draft. And I consider late because I reckon he was easily a first round talent. What a weapon. Not only now, but like the old pick, this guy could be a charger for life. Definitely two Michelin stars. Next, this is where I eat my humble cheese. It's the cheese course. Quinyon Mitchell, Terron Arnold, Nate Wiggins, Kool-Aid McKinstry, Mike Sanrastil, Ennis Rakestraw Jr. Who would have thought that Tahib Stilton would be ranked above all of them at the halfway mark of the 2024 season? The only rookies above still per PFF are Cooper DeJean, Renardo Green, and Andrew Phillips, all drafted far higher than Stilton. Who would have thought that a guy selected 137th and given a grade of C+ by CBS Sports would be the player to maybe earn Chef Ortiz a coveted third Michelin star? I'm almost done. However, the meal is not over yet. All these Michelin stars are still waiting to be given until the season's end. The dish served as Michigan Junior was unfortunately served Coldson alongside some overcooked rice. And Ortiz's signature cheese, Iboig Brie, is not on par with his Stilton just yet. The artichoke dip has been a bit gluggy, but shows promise and complexity, whilst the Vidalini fettuccine showed early promise but needs more depth of flavor. That being said, all signs are pointing to a delicious dining experience at the Bolt in 2024. Watch out, Wolfgang Puck. Chef Joe is on your heels. Yes, chef. Class dismissed.
Nice. I'm upset that he didn't touch on the Notre Dame lamb heart, which would have been quite a nice one. But, you know, that's more of a slow cook. We'll see how that goes.
Well, I did. It was the artichoke dip.
Sorry, very good. Should pay more attention. I was just, Stilton really got me. Nice one, mate. Classic as always. And you're right. It's been an incredibly solid class. And we're still kind of
more than solid. It's exceptional.
we're still kind of waiting to see how it sort of proves as the year goes on. But look, we've got the Titans coming up this week. They sit at 2-6. Before we dig into them, let's just have a quick injury recap. It's kind of nice actually doing the show a day later, having more than speculation to rely on when the Wednesday injury report comes out. Now, usually Khalil Mack will show up, NIR, rest. Big concern, he did leave the game. What looked like a Bosa-esque kind of pull-up on a pass rush play. It's listed as a groin. He was, you know, banging the seat. I think he's just a, you know, he's just a ruthless competitor. But he seems to think that a couple of jabs and bit of work should see him right. Christian Fulton with a hamstring, Denzel Perryman toe, and Jasir Taylor, who still got that sort of fibula injury, all missed practice. Bosa, Stone Smart, Trey Pipkins with an ankle, and Gus Edwards were limited. The team has just opened the 21-day return window from IR for Gus Edwards. But sadly, Simi Fehoko injured his elbow during the game, and Junior Colson both have been put on IR. Yeah, it's unfortunate for Colson because he battled appendicitis, obviously, in the preseason. He's missed a couple of games in the season now, and now he's got to sit out the next four. So a couple of roster moves. Jalen Reagor to the active roster. Your boy, happy with that, no doubt. Tight end Eric Tomlinson, cut, signed to the practice squad. Shaq Quarterman also signed to the practice squad. So we saw the Titans scrape their way to a 2017 win over New England after one of the more miraculous plays by Drake Mayer's time expired to send the game to overtime. I can't believe that he managed to just weasel his way through that pocket and then hit Ramondre Stevenson.
He looks okay, doesn't he, old Drake Mayes? Look at all
It's a bit of fun. As gets most rookie QBs, it was a game-ending interception. But he's got a bit of dual threat. He's racking up some yards on the ground. But we're not here to talk about the Patriots. We're here to talk about the Titans. So I'm just going to chuck a couple of headlines before Jack gets into some keys to victory. Chargers defense leaves Rudolph red-nosed. Mason's been able to stay relatively clean, having only been sacked six times in his four appearances. But he's thrown four interceptions and fumbled the ball four times, averaging less than 60% completion on 128 attempts. And out with the old model and showing off that sexy new ride. Chargers offense can burn the bridges of the past, coming up against outcasts like SJD and Kenneth Murray Jr. Thank you very much. How are we going to win this one, Jack?
Yeah, a couple of things. Dominating the defensive line after last week's showing, I have a feeling that we might. I think they gave up four sacks and multiple pressures in the Patriots game. Tony Pollard is a big one, so stopping the run. He's there. If he's not going, Levis can't get going, or Rudolph, whoever's going to be playing. So stop Tony Pollard. I think they lost Quandre Diggs for the season in their secondary. And, their secondary is a bit thin, so there's going to be some advantage on those big plays again. Either if it's Levis or Rudolph, get pressure on him, force them to throw those balls. I think this is Minter's defense that's going to absolutely cause nightmares for whoever the signal caller is for the Titans. I'm expecting picks again. You know, if I was a betting man like I was last week and said Molden for a pick, I'd do it again this week. And just manage the game tempo. Just take the ball out of the Patriots' hands. Break their wills, Titans. Smash them in the mouth. Sorry, the Titans. break their wills. They're away. We're home. Smash their faces and just get the win.
Yeah, I find it really interesting that while the run game for the Titans sits about 17th, middle of the pack, Rudolph is operating the 31st ranked offense as a whole, and the run blocking is ranked 30th. Lloyd Cushenberry placed on IR. Big loss at center. So level up again, linebackers. I'd like to see Joey Bosa playing a little bit more, because if this is going to be his last year as a Charger, then let's really burn him down to the nub. And the offensive line needs to shake off the cobwebs, refocus, heavy set of Arden Key, Jeffrey Simmons, Harold Landry. And if Tavondre Sweat plays, you know, it's big boy.
That's a nasty
I'm going with a bit of a palindromic prediction, 31-13 for the Chargers.
Yeah, well, I'm going 10-34 Chargers. So there you go. We're pretty close there. There we go.
Nice. As we like to round out the shows, we do a bit of league-wide stuff. We thought, considering the trade deadline has just come and gone. Joe Ortiz says the team's happy with what they have at this point, likely to hold on to 10 draft picks and close to $80 million in cap space heading into 2025. Offense is starting to tick. Defense is playing good. You know, it's hard to argue, but a lot of fans wanted Ortiz to cook. Well, I got to ask you, Jack, would it have been worth it? Let's have a look at the wide receivers that were traded and dealt. The Steelers wound up with Mike Williams from the Jets, sending over a fifth-round pick. The Chiefs, of course, you know, landed DeAndre Hopkins for a fifth-round pick to Tennessee. Ravens sent a fifth-round pick to Carolina for Diontae Johnson. I think that's too much. And this is really the crux of my point. The Cowboys, in true fashion, sent a fourth-round pick to Jonathan Mingo. So on top of Adams leaving Vegas for the bottom bunk in Aaron Rodgers' cave and the Bills stealing Amari Cooper from Cleveland, would it have been worth it to go hunting for a wide receiver?
If we go back to my teachable moment, you've just got to trust Ortiz. He's going to have, as you said, close to $80 million worth of cap room. He's going to have picks to boot as well, because you just don't know what free agents are going to walk from the Chargers in the offseason. We could be looking at, you know, upwards of 8 to 10 to 12 picks to wheel and deal on in the offseason. And you put it quite succinctly offline, Andy, is that in the middle of the season, you're just paying for everything. You're just overpaying. Yeah. I think every single one of those, a fifth round pick is Tahib Steele. And you go, when you look at it like that, I go, nah, no way would I want Mike Williams back here for a fifth round pick. And I don't know if Justin Herbert needs that. I don't know if Justin Herbert at the moment, with the way it might hurt us later in the year, fair enough, to not have a big X that can jump up and catch it. But at the moment he seems to be cooking and building chemistry. And do you want those older guys to come in and ruin what's going on at the moment? You just don't know the hierarchy.
That's fair.
Wide receiver room. The only thing that we could have said is that we would have liked an offensive lineman, but the only one to move was Cam Robinson to the Vikings, because the Vikings lost Darrisaw anyway, and he was a tackle, as you say. And you know, Cam Robinson's Cam Robinson. Anything else that caught your eye?
Yeah, not really many tight ends on the move. Look across the board, I think maybe defensive tackle Quinton Jefferson as a depth stretch. He wound up signing with the Bills after trade talks fizzled out and the Browns released him a couple of days ago. But other than that, I'm content. I think, you know, it's always nice. We've had that many years of being frustrated by ineffective leadership from Tom Telesco and, you know, unwillingness to sort of pull the trigger. He goes to the Raiders and does his first in-season trade, I think, in his career, and gets rid of Devontae Adams. So, for what we've got, and, you know, you talk about the bevy of draft picks that we're going to wind up with come next year. How many guys have we got it on one-year prove-it deals? We're not going to keep all of those guys. Puna Ford, Taye Tart. You'd like to think that Molden, and I think Fulton as well, maybe one of those two guys hangs around, or you get the compensation, possibly the year after. The year after. But look, it's all building in the bigger picture. I don't know if we're in a position to win now, but the way we're playing, we're the sixth ranked team in the AFC. If the season finished today, we'd be in the playoffs. We've got the tiebreaker ahead of the Broncos. So, look. In Joe, I trust, I believe. So I'm not going to I'm not going to start bashing the keyboard for Ortiz. Just, you know, he would have made the right decision. He would have had the phone going. Like you said, for fifth round pick is what a team wanted, for someone to fill a hole. And then you got to worry about more chemistry issues on offense. I don't know. I don't think it's worth it. So I don't mind it.
Yeah, what's his Ortiz's philosophy? I think it's quoted as the progressive team building philosophy. He asks, or he said that he goes into Harbaugh's office every morning and says, "What do you need me to do today? What do you need me to do today? What do you need?" The only couple that would have been well, one that would have been great. Tre'Davious White is actually having a great year.
That's a good one.
But the Ravens picked him up for next to nothing. Really, really experienced cornerback. He probably wanted to go to a team, I would suggest, that he has a chance at a Super Bowl. So I think that's going to be a very good one for the Ravens. A very annoying one is Josh Uche to the Chiefs.
Yeah.
I like Josh Uche, and they got him for a sixth-round pick. That's unbelievable value, I thought. And he's going to be relatively annoying, and I just have this feeling that he might come back to haunt us when we play the Chiefs next, whether that be in the season or hopefully in the playoffs. But Josh
does really
the Chiefs.
Does really boost up that defensive line. A couple of other ones that I like. Cardinals are sort of, you know, they're in the driver's seat in the NFC West, and I'm just happy. Like, I loved seeing Josie Jewell leave Denver, and now Baron Browning's gone too. Love that. That's great. The Marshawn Lattimore trade to the Commanders. There was whispers in the offseason that the Chargers might trade for Lattimore, but for what they've given, that's a real kind of all-in move. Mm. Steelers are feeling themselves with where they're sitting in the season. They've just... Because their edge room's so bad, they've brought over Preston Smith from the Packers. So yeah, look, it's interesting. It does make some of these teams, you know, the Chiefs, the Steelers, a little bit more tougher to beat come the end of the year. But for mine, moves like Deontay Johnson to the Ravens don't really move the dial. Tre'Davious White cornerback help is something that they absolutely needed, but you know they were going to pay a pretty penny for that. So. Yeah, look, there's some interesting ones. Once again, the Cowboys just should be selling. Their season's done, as far as I'm concerned. Dak Prescott's done a hamstring, and they're stinking it up. So, and I think I had them either winning or making or finishing second in the NFC East. But what do you do?
Indeed.
What do you do? Can't win them all. Anyway, guys, thanks so much for tuning in. We may welcome back Al next week. Hopefully we've got another victory pod. I'm feeling good about it. Chargers are 7.5-point favorites. We've hit that the last 2 weeks, even though I think we were only 1-point favorites against the Browns. So Jack's going interception for Elijah Molden again. I'm going to go just clear line winner. And we'll see you next time on the Thunder Down Under Chargers podcast. Take it easy.
Ta-ta.
He's got Floyd turning. Got it. Zigzag. 10, 5, high step. Touchdown, San Diego.
Woo! Good night. Good night to all.